This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 170, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 160 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week I'm talking to James Kelly about his book, Lone Believer, My Journey as a UFO Abductee. James has had encounters with various extraterrestrial beings, including terrifying abductions by hostile entities and life-saving interventions from benevolent forces. His experiences started at age 6 and have continued throughout his life. Hi, James. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited to be talking with everyone.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Lone Believer, My Journey as a UFO Abductee. If we could start at the beginning, you had your first experience while you were in the backyard. How old were you then?
I was 6 years old when my first experience happened to me. So I was actually fairly a young kid.
So what happened there? You were out, weren't you, sleeping in a sleeping bag?
Yeah, I mean, if we can just take it back to 1972, which for some of the listeners was a long time ago, but 1972, in elementary school at the end of the year, they always had a big, huge carnival. And I was always really excited about this because my mom gave me $3. And if back in 1972, $3 was like giving a $20 bill to a 6-year-old. Now, as a father, I would never do that because you know what a child's going to do at these carnivals. And I did it. I bought cotton candy. I bought all the stuff and I got home and I was just sick. But I was actually really excited because school was out and I could have the whole summer and being a boy and living in a very, very small town in Utah where you actually could ride bikes without anybody, you know, abducting you, without, you know, you'd sleep on the lawns. My parents left their doors open at night. So it was very Norman Rockwell-ish environment that I grew up in. And that night, I talked my mom into letting me sleep outside, not overnight, but just to sit in the backyard. I was really, really into astronomy, and I loved looking at the stars and just being out there. And after probably a 20-minute discussion with my mom, she finally agreed to let me go outside. So I hurried up and grabbed my sleeping bag and my pillow and went out and was lying in our backyard. Now, our backyard was probably, it wasn't a big yard, but it was probably 2/3 of an acre. It wasn't extremely big, but so I laid my sleeping bag out there and I was just lying there and looking up at the stars, and I was counting shooting stars that went by and looking at the constellations. And I remember thinking, looking at the Big Dipper, about why would my mom tell me that there's milk in the Big Dipper? To me, even as a 6-year-old child, that seemed kind of strange that she would tell me something like that. But you know, that's what I would do, is I just lay out and look at the stars. But that night when I was looking at the stars, I noticed on the southwest, there was a big bright star. It's one that I hadn't noticed before. And it was bigger. It was bigger than the rest. And I just kept looking at it like, wow, that's kind of cool. It wasn't moving at all. It just sat there. So I was thinking, well, maybe it's not a star at all. Maybe it's a planet. Maybe, you know, it's Jupiter. And I just have forgotten the location that they're at. But the more I started looking at it and the longer I did, I noticed there was just something not right. And within a few minutes, the light that was in the distance, it was probably 2 miles away in the sky, was from that point to halfway to my house within a split second. And it was very unnerving to me. I'm like, what could that possibly be? I mean, we did have an army base that was by our house, but it was probably about 10 or 12 miles away. So I was thinking, you know, it couldn't have been a helicopter because helicopters can't move that fast, and it can't be a jet because jets continually move, they just don't stop. And the more I looked at this light, the more I was just like, what the heck? And then within a second, it was directly over my house and it was no longer a light. It was a giant triangle black spacecraft. And the spacecraft made no noise. It was hovering above me, probably about, I'd say maybe 100 feet. And it just sat there making absolutely no noise. On the bottom of the spacecraft, I noticed that it had an orange triangle, and then it had three lights on each side of the triangle. And I was just in fear. I didn't know what this thing was. I knew it was some kind of a spacecraft or an aerial craft, but I didn't know exactly what it was. And I pulled the covers over my head. I don't know if anybody's ever done that, but I know as a little kid, when you're in bed and you're scared of the monsters, you always cover your head and you make a little breathing hole so you can breathe through. Because, you know, in your mind, you're like, okay, if they can't see me and if I stay still, then they don't know I'm there. And so that's exactly what I did, is I just was lying there. Then all of a sudden, the whole backyard lit up like it was in a stadium, like stadium lights were shining down on my backyard. And I poked my head out from underneath the sleeping bag and I looked up and the light from that triangle was coming down directly on me. And I started to get really scared. I wanted to go inside. But then all of a sudden, I felt calm, almost like a peaceful feeling came over me. And while I was laying there, I just could hear in my mind, somebody, you know, was speaking to me. And I thought that was weird. And they were calling me by a different name than I remembered. Because my name is James. And this sound or this voice in my head was calling me Melio, which, if you read my book and get on, that's actually my star child name that was given to me by the Arcturians. But it was just kind of strange that this beam of light was coming down and lit up my entire yard. But it didn't wake anybody up. It didn't cause people to come outside. And within a second after that, I woke up and I was on the craft. And I was confused where I was. I didn't understand where I was, but I knew I was no longer at my backyard. And I just sat there thinking, you know, what the heck is going on? But just soon after that, a lady, I guess a female being, actually walked into my room and started talking with me. And I thought that was really strange, because this being, she was probably like 5 feet, a little over 5 feet tall. She had beautiful blue skin. The skin was different. It wasn't just one color or one shade of blue. It was different shades of blue. Her eyes were just incredibly striking. They were like 2 to 3 times the size of our eyes. Her head was, if you looked straight onto it, it looked normal, but her head was actually oblonged. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful woman. She had on a almost like a cloak covering her clothing, and her cloak was lined with like almost gold trim. It looked gold to me. It could have been, you know, whatever, but as a child, that's what I remembered it to be. But, you know, her calling me Melio and started talking to me. And another thing is, when I asked her, I'm like, why are you calling me that? My name is James. Why are you calling me this Melio? And she told me that it means little star. And I asked her, I'm like, what? And she goes, I am your star mother, and you are a star seed. Now, being 6 years old, I didn't understand any of that. But I did know, I do know that I wasn't on the earth anymore. I was in a spacecraft. So when I asked her, her name is Lauren, I asked her, you know, where the heck am I? She explained to me that I was on a spacecraft, and she kept calling Earth Terra for some reason. You know, that does mean Earth, but that's how she talked about Earth. And she also told me, you know, come over here, sit on the bed. And there was a bed in this room. There was not much left in the bedroom. It was just a table, some chairs, and a bed. And then there was a wall, and the wall was glass. And it was like a black computer screen that wasn't turned on. And she just told me, she goes, you know, come over here. And she had a really motherly expression to her. It was a very calm thing. And I could tell that she was trying to make me not excited, just kind of calm me down. And when I asked her where we were, she said, use your hand and touch the glass and say open. And so I did that, and I put my hand on the glass, and I thought in my mind, open. And all of a sudden it was like there was no glass there. And I was scared, and I kind of stepped back a little bit because I could look down and I could see the earth. We weren't orbiting the earth, but we were outside of the earth, and I could see the stars. I could see everything, which if you think back to being 6 years old, that could be a very frightening experience as well. And just being there at that time and not knowing where I was, and all this was happening really fast, and I was trying to process it. It was really, really, really tough time. But she was actually an Octorian. After speaking with her for a while, she said that she was sent to receive me, which I thought was an interesting word, and to teach me. She had given me gifts and skills that I needed to use as a star child to bring peace and harmony and love back to the world, because the world's going to be changing. And then I was sent here to help with that change to what she called the second earth, as the transition. This earth is going to go away and the second earth is going to appear, almost like a heaven, I guess you could call it that. So yeah, being on there, it was very, very interesting. And after, you know, a while, she took my hand and she said, come with me. And we went over and sat at the table. And this table was a long table. It was white and it had almost looked like metal chairs to it. And we sat there and we talked. Like I said, she was very motherly to me, almost like you were just spending some time with your real mom. And I thought to myself, wow, can I go to you? Can I go with you to your planet? And I remember her looking at me and she's like, no, like moms do. No, you can't have this. No, you can't do this. And I said, you know, please, can I do that? She's like, no, Emilio, you can't go, but I can show you. And I remember her putting her hand on my, you know, my chest and my head, and instantly we were standing on her planet. And we were actually standing on this huge, how would I put it? It's almost like a platform, but then it had grand staircase that actually went down to it. And they were covered with brown, almost like granite stones with gold flakes into them. And as we stood there, she had still a hold of my hand in my mind. We were just standing next to each other. And she put her hand across like she was showing me, well, this is my planet. And, you know, as I looked across and seen everything, it was almost like a movie was playing inside my mind. Everything had such great detail. I could smell everything like I was physically actually there. I could see, you know, huge trees. The grass was like purplish, bluish. And, you know, the plants, the trees were massive and they had gold and silver leaves. And I could see the blue towering mountains, you know, way off in the distance in, you know, white clouds that you'd see on Earth in the sky. But the sky was, it was just different. It wasn't the same. It was, you could see planets from the sky. And it was more purplish than blue. And, you know, we look up and see our sun, and you could see how yellow and goldish is. Theirs was very, very large, and it was more of a, almost like a reddish orange color to it. But it was the most beautiful place that I'd ever seen. I mean, there's some really beautiful places here on Earth, but nothing really compared to looking at that. And she just looked over at me and smiled. And the next thing I knew, we were over an ocean. And they have vast oceans on their planet like we do here. And I just smiled at her. And I was really excited and scared at the same time because I'm a small guy. I'm not massive. And I was never a great swimmer. I'd always go to the pool. And then I'd swim for a little bit and get out, lay on the sidewalk, and then I was done. I didn't swim. And so I was a little bit nervous about going there, but we actually went down and sunk into the ocean. And while we were in the ocean, I could just see everything. I could see what they called fish swimming by. I could just see all kinds of plants. And I remember just being so excited. Because one of my favorite superheroes is Aquaman, and I was just very excited. I'm like, yes, I could be Aquaman, and I was really excited about that happening. And you know, words could barely describe what I was seeing. They had like plants, but they looked like seaweed, but they were like purple and orange, and they had like almost bioluminescence around their edges. And the sea anemones were like four or five times the size of ours. And they were just really huge and almost looked like giant Brussels sprouts, I guess is a way that I remember them seeing them. But they had, you know, bright golden rocks of coral and green. And it was just beautiful, just a beautiful place that I remember being at. And I remember, wow, this is just the greatest place I could be. I'd love to just stay here. And she must have read my mind, because within a second we weren't there. We were actually standing over a city, and the city was huge. It was massive. And the buildings weren't like the buildings that we see today. Everything was round. It was tall, but round, and they were white with green and black glass onto them, almost like the purity. Something was very pure about them. And the structures were, you could see that there was like little mini greenhouses around. And then they had walking paths with beautiful plants. What I remember is huge lilies, like 7 feet tall lilies that were really beautiful. And I remember asking her, you know, where are we? She says, this is my city. This is where I live. And we just stood there and looked at the city. And I asked her, you know, a lot of questions about, you know, how long have you been here and where do you live and things like that. But after a while, in my mind, I had lost myself. And I was thinking, I want to stay here forever. I don't want to leave. And as soon as I thought that, we were back on the ship. I think that Lauren, actually being the motherly type that she was, said, no, it's not time. And I remember her saying, you know, it's not time. And she goes, it will be time. You will learn more and we will meet again. but right now I need you to be home. And my place is on earth. It's not with her right now. And I remember just smiling at her and sitting on the bed. And the next thing I remember was waking up in my bedroom with my blanket over the top of me. And I'm like, how in the world did I get in here? I was outside. How did I? And so I got up and walked over to my window, opened my drapes, and looked outside, and my pillow and my blanket was still, and my sleeping bag was still on the lawn. And I'm like, did my parents come in? You know, what was going on? And so I'm like, oh, maybe they brought me in. And so I just closed the curtains, went back to bed, snuggled up, and went back to sleep. But, you know, the morning came around, and I asked my mom, I said, hey, Mom, did you bring me inside? Did Dad bring me inside last night? And they're like, no, we didn't bring you inside. We thought you came in by yourself. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And she's like, well, we didn't bring you inside. And that's when it dawned on me. And I started placing everything together. And I started to remember more and more about what happened that night. And I tried to talk to my mom. My mom was a psychologist. She was trained in dealing with disabilities, teaching people that were deaf and blind how to sign language and talk by signing in their hands. And so she dealt with that. But she would always, I loved my mom, but she would never listen to me. She would always say, you know, James, it's just a vivid dream. And I'm like, Mom, no, I smelled the ocean. I smelled everything. I could smell the air. The air smelled like it was like watermelon smell. She goes, you know, James, it's okay. Everybody has these dreams, and they could be very, very vivid dreams, but it's just a nice dream, honey. And she just kind of put it off. And I pushed a little bit until she started getting a little bit upset, like moms do, to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm done. And I didn't talk anymore about it. And, you know, I had a good childhood after that. It was a very, very special thing to me. And through the next couple of years, I always remembered Lauren, and I would sit outside and I would call her name and hope that she would come whenever she would come back, because I'd really love to see her again, but she didn't. And then, unfortunately, when I turned 8 years old, my life had actually changed. Not that it didn't change enough at that point, but my life actually changed to the point where, just like on earth here, there's good people and there's bad people, and there's good people and there's very evil people that are out in the cosmos, in our galaxy. And when I turned 8 years old, I got to know some of these very bad people. I refer to them as the furnace people. And I'll get into that in just a little bit, but it was the Grays, and they made a point of it when I was 8 years old to start their little journey of abducting me. And I was probably abducted by the Grays between age 8 and age 20, probably around 7 or 8 times. And so so that's all started my journey. And I didn't quite understand why there was bad people, because being 6 years old, I only knew Lauren from Arcturia. She was such a great person. And then to deal with this nightmare, waking nightmare, the rest of my life, it was a little bit different. So,
yeah, because the Grays were sinister, weren't they? They just were not nice. They seemed pretty brutal.
Yeah.
What was your first interaction with them? Why did you call them the Furnace People?
When I was 8 years old, I slept upstairs, and my older sister slept downstairs. And the reason I called them the Furnace People is because when I was abducted by the Grays, they actually took me from my bedroom upstairs, took me downstairs through a portal in our basement where the furnace was, and I walked through the furnace area onto their ship. And so that's when I was little, I just tied them both together. Like, okay, these are not aliens. These are evil monsters. They are They come from our furnace. And that's why in my book, I called them the furnace people.
So they kind of dragged you out, didn't they? There was nothing nice about it. They were quite mean to you and quite physically mean as well.
Yeah, when I was 8 years old and when I started being abducted by the Greys, I was just lying in bed and I had a normal room that a boy had. I had Legos and I had Stretch Armstrong. I don't know if people remember those. I'm kind of dating myself. And then I had my Hulk doll. My Hulk doll was somebody that I talked to. He never talked back, but I could share, everything that was going on with me in my life, whether I was being bullied at school or whatever, I talked to him about it. And so, I had a little normal childhood. And one night I just got ready for bed. And, let me back up just a little bit to kind of set a picture frame around this. It was the night before I was abducted by the Greys. My parents had this huge party. It was a barbecue. My parents loved a barbecue and they'd invite our family all the time and our neighbors. And my mom had fixed just tons of food, more than anybody could possibly eat. And it was kind of nice. And we had all kinds of hams and salads and stuff. And it was great. And, the neighbors were over and we ended up eating watermelon. But that night, just kind of paraphrase a little bit, we saw a ship in the sky, and it was to the west of us, and it wasn't just me, it was my entire family, it was our neighbors. And I remember sitting there and watching all this, and I remember seeing my mom's vase, and she would look down at me and she took my hand, and when she took my hand, it wasn't a gentle I love you hand, she was squeezing my hand and pulling me close to her chair. And we sat there and watched that for a while until it finally went out of sight. And we just sat around talking about it. And everybody was, is it real? Was it a helicopter? Was it this? Was it that? No. And the longer they talked, the more they started to disagree with each other. And I think it was because of fear, and they were trying to justify what they saw. And then the conversation ended and nobody really talked about it. And so my mom told me, go inside. I think she didn't want me to be, around to any of this, because I was only 8 years old. And so I go, I kind of want to stay outside. And she goes, nope, go in the house. So I did go in the house and I got ready for bed and I got into bed. And then that's the night that I was actually abducted by the Greys. And I think that was their ship. And I think they were just looking and waiting. Because later that night I heard, footsteps coming up through the hall, past my parents' room, and they stopped in front of my room. Now my older sister, when she gets scared sometimes, she would come up from downstairs and lie on my floor. So I thought, in my mind, it might be my sister. Because it's happened a couple of times. And so I was just lying there and I made my hole of my blanket just a little bit bigger. And I looked over to my door and I expected to see my sister walk in. And the door, just like in a horror movie, it just slowly opened. And as it slowly opened, I saw two Greys standing there. And as they were standing there, they looked at me and they had these humongous black eyes. And their skin wasn't like gray. It was more of a shade. It was gray and red and it had some browns into it. So it was just a little bit different. And their arms were a lot longer. They went to their knees. And when they walked, it wasn't like a normal walk. It was almost like their gait wasn't secure. And I just pulled the covers over my head. I'm like, oh no, there's monsters coming for me. And I thought, please just go away. If I just lie here still, they'll go away. Well, they didn't go away. And they actually, during that time, they actually, pulled my covers back, took me. And it was pretty terrifying to a little kid. Once they got a hold of me, I couldn't go. Their hands were like twice the size of mine. I didn't want to go, but they said, "You're coming with us." And I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I could move my eyes and I could think, but I couldn't physically move at all. And why I was there, when the beings actually approached and they lifted me out of bed, I actually was placed into, it's like a glowing field. It was almost like it wasn't a bubble, but it was a glowing thing of energy. And I was lying in that and I could look, and I wasn't touching the floor at all. I was off the floor, and they could actually just push that along. They weren't touching it. They were just walking with it. And they would take me out of my bedroom. And I thought to myself, good, they're going by my mom and dad's room. My parents will see this and they will actually save me from these people. But that didn't happen. They continually walked me down through the hallway, down through the kitchen, down the stairs. And then I saw this big portal that was small at first, but then opened up in front of the furnace room. And we actually walked right through it. And when we walked right through it, then I was actually on the ship. And they had taken me out of the bubble and placed me on a metal table, kind of like the metal tables that you see like at a veterinarian. They were like stainless steel, very cold. And it was just terrifying to me. And I remember lying there, the smaller grays actually came and strapped down my feet and my hands after they had taken off my pajamas. So I was actually, you know, lying there. Imagine cold, 8 years old, cold, naked, strapped down to a table, not knowing where you were, all this stuff happening. And it was just crazy. And I was fighting them. And I'm like, just let me go. I want to go home. And I remember crying and telling them, please just let me go. Let me go. And then a woman walked in, which I think she was a woman. She seemed like a woman, but she was like twice as tall as the other gray. So I'm thinking that the smaller grays were more workers or somebody that they had sent, because this lady came in and walked right, you know, right over to me. And I think she could tell that I was scared, because she said, relax, we're not going to harm you. But I noticed that her mouth didn't move. I could hear it in, you know, in my head, that she was just like, it's okay, just calm down, everything's going to be okay. And I just couldn't calm down, because even though she said, relax, you need to relax, I just couldn't. I don't know anybody who could. I mean, I was lying naked on a table, strapped down. I didn't know what they were going to do or anything like that. But I remember in my mind how Lauren talked to me. She didn't move. She used telepathy. And I said, hey, my name is James. What's your name? Because I tried to communicate with her. And she wouldn't answer me for two or three times. And I finally said, hey, I'm scared. I want to go home. Please let me go home. You know, where am I? And then she was saying that she was, she was a being from a different star cluster in the Milky Way galaxy. And they were coming here to visit the Earth and to do things. And I'm like, oh, okay. That doesn't help me at all. But after a few minutes, she just kept talking with me, and she kept trying to get me to calm down and be at ease. And after a minute, I'm like, okay, it's going to be okay. If I just lie here, it's going to be okay. But it wasn't going to be okay. One of the gray aliens came over and they reached up like they were trying to pick something out of the air. And they had a instrument came down that was long and silver, and it had almost like a jar, it seemed like, on the end of the thing. And they just stood there, and I thought to myself, you know, what are they going to do with this thing? And within, you know, a minute, they held my head down and they stick this thing up into my nose. And I felt it go up into my nose, up into my sinus cavity. And I was just screaming. I was saying, stop, it's hurting me. It's hurting me. Stop. And I was just crying and they didn't stop. And then I heard and felt a crunch. And then all of this fluid started leaking out of my face and running down my face on the side of my cheek into my ear. And they started collecting whatever, wherever that fluid was. I didn't know back then what it was, but now I do. They were actually taking cerebral spinal fluid for my brain, and they were actually collecting it. And they just didn't care. They were very monotonous. They were doing their job, and that's what it was. It didn't matter that I was scared or crying. They were just no feelings. They were just getting the job done. And even though I kept saying, please stop, they didn't. They just finished their job and what they were doing. And then afterwards, I just felt, you know, as it was running down my face, I felt it pooling under my shoulders. And I just thought to myself, please, Mom. And I was just crying. I want to go home. Please, Mom. Because when you're little, that's all you think about is your mom has to save you. And I was just sobbing. And I was sobbing. And then I felt an injection, something really warm in my shoulder. And I went back to sleep. And the next thing I know, I was lying in my bed. And I knew something had happened to me. This just wasn't a dream because I knew all of this had happened. I mean, dreams like that are very, very vivid. But, you know, like I woke up and just started looking over myself, looking at my chest, looking at my nose, looking around. I finally just took off all my pajamas. I had my favorite baseball pajamas on, and I tried to look for any marks that were on my skin. And the only thing I could find was like little scratches that were actually on my wrist. And I just decided that, you know, hey, I'm just going to go and take a bath and poured some Mr. Bubbles in the tub and took a long hot bath and kind of just sat there and trying to understand what just happened. It was actually a living nightmare. And I got out of the tub, got dressed. My mom's like, hey, you need to go to school. And I'm just like, I don't want to go to school. And she goes, well, come in the kitchen and get some breakfast. And so she's like, what do you want for breakfast? And I said, I don't care what you just give me something. Cereal is fine. And I remember eating it. But there wasn't enough of it. And she said, well, why don't you go downstairs? And there's a box of Apple Jacks. If anybody remembers Apple Jacks, downstairs in our storage room. And as I walked down, she wanted me to walk down there. And I'm like, Mom, I'm not going downstairs. No way. There's no way I'm going downstairs because that's where the furnace people is. And then I, you know, I started to talk to her about it. And then, you know, once again, bless her heart. She's gone now, but bless her heart. She would always just sit me down and talk to me and say, it's okay, James. You're just having these vivid nightmares. It's okay. Things will pass. You'll be okay. And then she would just dismiss it. And she'd always feed me food and she would pat me on my head or give me hugs. A lot of the time she'd give me these kisses. They're mom's kisses that are very wet. I don't know if anybody has those mom's kisses, but you don't want them. They leave sweat nasty on you. But she was just always there, but I just wanted her to listen so bad, but she wouldn't. I mean, I don't know. Was that her mechanism of dealing with it? I'm not quite sure, but that was my first experience with the Grays. And it really never did stop the rest of my life until probably September of this year, I was abducted by what's called the Shakara Greys, which apparently live on the dark side of the moon, and they experimented on me to the point that they almost killed me. And that's another story in itself.
With the Arcturians, they were the good guys, so to speak. The Greys were the bad guys, but did the Arcturians ever talk to you about the Greys?
They never mentioned anything to me about the Greys until it was later when I asked Lauren, I said, why are you letting this happen to me? Why are you letting them hurt me? You're supposed to be there for me. And she just said, everything is for your wisdom and growth. And I didn't understand that then, but now I do understand it as an adult. You know, I'm 58, and everything that I've been through, that I needed to experience the Greys abducting me in order to learn how to stand up to the Greys and be able to learn and progress down my journey. So I kind of understand what she was saying, but as a little kid, I thought that was kind of crazy that they wouldn't come and help me. I was left alone.
Do you feel the Greys were interested in you because of your connection to the Arcturians?
Yes, I actually was told by a Grey. I asked him, why you keep abducting me? And it's because of my DNA. My DNA is actually different. If a doctor looks at my DNA normal, it would just be, you know, a normal DNA. They wouldn't really see anything. But they are coming to get me because I'm special. I'm a star child, which I am different. And one time when the Greys did abduct me, I looked over and I asked them, why are you here? Why are you doing this? They said, we are after your DNA because normal DNA from the humans have been corrupted and we need pure star child DNA. And it's just not me because I'm an Arcturian star child. There's Palladian star child. There's Nori star children. There's a lot of star children that are here on this earth right now.
So when you say star children and pure DNA, does that mean that those races have been genetically engineering humans to have this DNA?
Yes. So the DNA that I actually have, if you think about it, I have a human body. I'm here, but my energy, my life force, everything that's with me is Arcturian. And I had a choice to come here and to go through what I'm going in and experience the things that I have to experience and to be actually here. And it took me a long time to finally understand actually who I am. That's why my second book that I'm writing is called You're Not Alone. So it's a little bit of a different take on what I've experienced.
So there was a time when you were taken by the Greys and you were on board a ship and there were lots of other people who were also star children.
That was a very interesting experience because I wasn't even, you know, thinking anything about it. I was just on a ride and, you know, it was a summer day and I was just out riding. And we have a huge lake around us. And if you drive around the lake area, it takes about 2.5 hours and it's very scenic and it's very nice to be able to do it. And you can drive out to the Great Salt Lake and things like that. So that day I decided that I was going to, you know, drive out and drive around and do some things. But that day I was actually went around a corner and there was a ship and they had taken me. And when I actually got onto the ship, there was a lot of people my age there, a lot of people. And I was really surprised on how many people was there. And I just was sat there and I remember, no, not again. I don't want to go through this again. And I remember just sitting there with my hands on my head. And I started sobbing and I remember having a hand on my shoulder and I looked up and there was a girl there and she goes, what's your name? And we started talking and that's when I started realizing what was happening because she was from a town probably about 50 miles away who was abducted. And then later we started talking to other people, and they were from around that area. And, you know, they said the same thing. I was asking them, why do you want us? It's because they want my DNA. They want our eggs. They want our sperm. They want our DNA because they're creating a better, they said, life force.
So did you ever meet any of those people after that incident?
I have not seen them since. No, it was only that incident. I have not met with them since. Well, I'll take that back. I don't remember meeting them again. I've met a lady in August, and she goes, "Hi, James, how are you?" And I'm like, "Do I know you?" She goes, "Yes." And she leaned over. She goes, "We were on the ship together." I'm like, "I don't remember being on a ship with you." And she started talking to me about it. And I said, I don't remember. I'm sorry. I don't remember being on that ship. So, you know, there could be things that's happened that I don't remember. And they could have taken me again with all of the other, you know, people, but it's possible.
Did your family ever see anything, maybe just lights in the house or hear noises?
My sister, like I said, she used to have her room, her bedroom was right by the furnace room. And her door had a pocket door and it slides back and forth. And she told me the story where she was actually woken up because she heard stuff almost like a dog that wants to get in, clawing at her door. But we had no dog. And she got really, really scared. And she waited for the sound to go away. And she opened her door slowly. She didn't see anybody there. So she took off upstairs. And that's when she slept on the side of my bed all night. And afterwards, I asked her, I'm like, "What are you doing here? What are you doing in my room?" She says, "Well, had a bad dream. You know, somebody was, you know, I heard noises and stuff in my room." And I started talking about, you know, aliens and stuff. But I was really careful to speak with anybody about that because you kind of want to feel the waters because you do get ridiculed. But we did go down and look at my sister's door on the outside of her pocket door. There it looked like somebody had gotten their fingernails and had tried to pull open the door, even though it was locked. And you could see really deep scratches on the door. And the scratches were about 4 feet high off the floor. So, and we didn't have any animals. So I don't know how it could have gotten there. My sister wouldn't have scratched her own door. And so that, you know, that's kind of one of the things that does it happen. I've had a lot of ailments that throughout my life with my heart, my brain, my lungs, all kinds of different things that my doctor and my parents had taken me to the physicians and hospitals on several occasions, and they can't figure out how this happened. I'm usually normally healthy, and they can't figure out why I'm having all this trauma to my body. Like one time the Grays had abducted me, and they had stuck a long tube into my chest and went through my heart. And they were doing, you know, all kinds of experiments onto me. But once I was off the ship and I was home, there was no signs of anything on me. But later, there was a major hole in my heart. And when I went to the cardiologist, he had taken some scans and he said it was the biggest hole in my septum that he's ever seen. And he was saying he can't believe I'm even alive because most of the oxygenated blood was flowing from one side of my heart all the way through. It wasn't being oxygenated with my lungs. It was actually going right back out. And, you know, surgery, it was fixed. But, you know, little things like that. I have CFS leaks, which if anybody knows what that is, it's a cerebral spinal leak through my nose where brain fluid will just leak out of my nose. And one time, you know, it was leaking. I've had really bad headaches. Ended up going to a ear, nose, and throat doctor, and he did a scan. He says, "Well, I think you have this leak. We just need to fix it." He said it was an easy fix. But when we did surgery, he put the camera up inside my nose and he saw there was a huge hole up in my sinuses. And you could see my brain was sitting in this hole. And so they patched it up in there and fixed it. But it really hasn't really stopped the leaks. The leaks still happen a lot. And, you know, I have all kinds of physical ailments that's caused by the grays. I mean, if you look at me, you can really tell because there's no signs. But internally, there is signs and damage. So it's, my mom and dad never saw anything. They really didn't see any lights. They didn't see anything. One time, you know, after the first people abducted me when I was 8 years old, I didn't like to sleep in my own room anymore. I was too scared. And so I'd always sleep in my parents' room, and they would let me sleep in their bed. And then they would come up and give me a glass of milk and tuck me in. And they were really understanding about the nightmares, so-called, I was having. But then my dad, you know, being military, he was like, you know, you need to sleep in your own bed, dude. You need to go and, you know, be a man, sleep in your own room. And I'm like, I don't want, I'm scared, Dad. He said, I don't care. Took me to my room and I started sleeping in there. And I'd hear noises in the night and I would get out of bed and run into my parents' room. And I remember this one night that I ran into my parents' room. I woke up my mom and said, please, I hear these noises. It's the first people. I need to get in your bed. She's like, no, go back to bed, James. Go back to bed. You're a big kid. Go back to bed. Just a dream. Said, no, please, can I sleep with you? And then my dad, of course, I woke him up and he's saying, hey, no, you need to sleep in your own bed. But I've learned over the years not to talk to my dad, to talk to my mom and give her the voice. And I said, you know, please, mom, just let me sleep. And so she agreed. So they had a king size bed and I slept in the middle of them. And it was nice. I felt very comforted. My dad on one side, my mom on the other side. Nobody was going to touch me because my dad would have got out and took care of business. But, you know, I'm just lying there and I was awoken one night and I pulled the covers down off my face and I saw two grays standing at the foot of my mom and dad's bed. And they said to me, I could hear them in my mind, you're coming with me. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going anywhere with you. And I remember grabbing a hold of my mom's hand and arm trying to, you know, you're not taking me anywhere. But they said, if you don't come with me, I'm going to kill your parents. And I saw this image in my mind of them stabbing my mom and dad to death. It was very graphic. And they grabbed a hold of my ankles and they pulled me out of bed and I'm hanging on to my mom. But I tried everything and I couldn't. And they took me and they did horrible, horrible experiments to me. And it was like they were looking for something. It was like as I was lying on the table, they would keep scanning me and looking around like they were looking for something they had implanted in me. And then, you know, they stuck the needle in my thigh. I could feel it go into my bone. And I was screaming and they pulled it out and they pulled something out that looked about the size of a grain of rice. And they placed it on the table and then they just left. And then I was lying there. They did other experiments with my groin and other things, but it was just awfully strange that I woke up after that experience in my own bed, not my mom and dad's bed. And my mom was like, you want some breakfast? Yeah, I want some breakfast. And, you know, tried to talk to my mom about it again. And we were talking. She's like, yeah, you weren't in my bed. I'm like, yeah, I was taken by the furnace people again. And then I just broke down and I loved my mom. And she just picked me up, sat her on my, you know, I sat on her lap and she picked up her apron and wiped the tears from my eyes and said, it's okay. Nobody's ever going to hurt you. It's okay. It's just a dream. But she didn't really understand that all of this was real. Everything that was going on was real. And it was almost like breadcrumbs. I was leaving breadcrumbs of knowledge along the way, but she wasn't picking up on them. I mean, I wasn't outside. I was coming in inside. I was not in my bed. I was laying in here. I was not in my bed. I was in their bed. I was in my bed. You know, all kinds of little things that were happening with my body. And they just didn't ever ever put it together. And I never really told anybody about any of this until last year. And I told my wife, and my poor wife, she's dealing with all this now. And so she's, it's hard for her. She wants to believe me. She really wants to believe me, but you know, I understand all this coming on her. How are you supposed to process all this? So it's a little tougher.
Well, we've been talking about your book, Lone Believer, My Journey as a UFO Abductee, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, they can get it on Amazon. You know, it's there available in the US and then also Amazon UK.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for coming to the podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was enjoying being here, and thank you so much for listening. If I can, the reason I wrote the book is because there's so many people out there that's had similar experiences to me that I really wanted to let them know that it's okay. Similar people, they don't know who to talk to. And so, you know, their marriages fail, they commit suicide because they don't know where to turn to. So I wrote this book and hoping that, you know, somebody's life will turn around by reading it. So if anybody's out there is listening, is going through the same thing, buy the book and you're not alone. You'll be okay.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And that was an interview with James Kelly about his book, Lone Believer, My Journey as a UFO Abductee. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode, which is an extra 30 minutes. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. Hi, Simon here. My new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, is now available for pre-order as an ebook and audiobook on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. This book shares many incredible near-death experiences, each with verifiable proof that challenges everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. In the book, individuals whose hearts had stopped and whose brains had flatlined saw things that were later verified. Things they should not have been able to see, because by all medical understanding, they were dead. These are real stories, backed by real evidence, that will make you question what lies beyond. If you're fascinated by near-death experiences and mysteries of life and death, pre-order your copy today. Again, that's Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.